You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm grumpy today. Anyone else? The word of the day is disappointing. And last night was every bit as disappointing as it can be for the Sacramento Kings, who once again blow a double-digit first-half lead. They play what arguably was their worst quarter all season in the second quarter in Minnesota, and they drop what could be, what was a massive opportunity and what could be one thing or something we're specifically looking at if the Kings don't make the playoffs this season. Yesterday's game, yesterday's loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the fallout from other teams in the playoff hunt around the NBA. This could be the date that we point to as the reason why, the main reason why, the Kings did not make the postseason this year. Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Locked On Kings podcast. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. This is your hub for Sacramento Kings coverage each and every single weekday. If you're looking for in-depth analysis, game-by-game breakdowns, highlights, player audio, interviews with all the local and national experts, this is the place for you. I'm from Sports 1140 KHDK. That's the flagship radio station of the Kings here in Sacramento. I work there as an on-air host and a multimedia journalist and reporter, and I'm considered there a blind optimist, and in a playful way, but for the most part, actually pretty much about 99% of me when it comes to the Sacramento Kings is optimistic, and it has been for many, many years, and that's how I've been very open about that. That's a coping mechanism for me to get me through the last 12 years of no playoffs, but this season there's been a lot to be optimistic about, and I had this optimistic mindset and attitude going into this year, and it's nice to see things start to pay off. But we have transitioned with the Kings this season from hoping for a young core to start to play well together and be entertaining and be competitive to a team that is trying to make the playoffs. The Kings players have been very vocal about that as their mindset. They are trying to make the playoffs this year. They believe they can make the playoffs right now, and they want to be held accountable as a playoff team. So myself and many fans in Sacramento are now looking at them and looking at the remainder of their season as if they have playoff expectations and should be making the postseason. Now, I will never, ever, ever claim here on this podcast or anywhere else that I expected the Kings to make the playoffs this year and that I will be angry, frustrated, upset, or let down if the Kings do not make it. But I will be, word of the day, disappointed, just like I was disappointed that the Kings really failed on a golden opportunity last night. And in that failure, not only did they not make up any ground in their playoff race, they actually lost ground in terms of there is now another team that is chomping at their heels, now tied for the 10th seed with the Los Angeles Lakers, are the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Kings had a chance to, they were in control of their own destiny. Not only could they move up in the playoff standings and get into the playoffs and get into that 8th seed, they could also effectively push the Minnesota Timberwolves, a shorthanded Minnesota Timberwolves team, out of it. And they were not able to do that. We're going to discuss all the missed opportunities and the Kings' struggles in this loss against the Minnesota Timberwolves. I'm going to discuss a lot about head coach Dave Yeager's rotations, the head-scratching decisions that he's made periodically throughout his career and tenure as the Kings head coach, but they were glaring issues last night, particularly down the stretch. We'll also discuss strength of schedule, and I might sneak it in at the very end if you're not aware of this Mike Bibby sexual assault story. I don't like to touch or give my opinions on these things. I might just read the story for you verbatim towards the very end just so you are aware of it if I have time to do so, but I encourage you to look it up in your own time. The story is everywhere. You can get the full report, get all the details, and establish your opinion based off of that, but I will be mentioning that or try to mention that here towards the end of the story, or towards the end of the podcast, rather. But let's discuss this loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves last night. And there are so many layers to this loss and the effect that it has to the Kings in this playoff race. I'm going to try and go through as many as I can, but talking specifically about the basketball game itself, once again, and this is something, this was my only complaint that I had about the Oklahoma City Thunder win, and I brought it up on yesterday's podcast, and I was trying not to be too negative about it. I was just bringing it up, and it once again reared its ugly head and proved my point. The Kings had, once again, a double-digit lead in the first half of a ball game, and it evaporated quickly. In fact, it evaporated as quick as it possibly could in the second quarter, and we saw the Kings build a double-digit lead against Oklahoma City Thunder in the first half. That evaporated in the third and fourth quarters consistently. If the Kings get off to good starts and take double-digit leads early, those leads aren't going to last. Now, I said this on yesterday's podcast. I understand and believe and know that the NBA is a game of runs. And if a team typically gets off to a good start, oftentimes another team or the opposing team is going to put together some kind of run to attempt to get themselves back into a game. It's just how basketball is played in the modern day, and it's how basketball has been played for really in all of its existence, especially or certainly in all of my existence. That being said, good teams are able to withstand those storms and win games and still manage to keep their safety net relatively comfortable, and that's something that the Kings consistently have been unable to do throughout this season. So Kings build a 13-point lead early. They lead by 12 after a very, very successful first quarter. Offensively, they didn't look good, and they didn't look good offensively at all throughout this game, and we'll discuss that in a little bit. But the Kings outscored the Timberwolves 30-19 in the first quarter. They led by as much as 13 points early on in the second quarter, and that's when everything fell apart. And when I say fell apart, I mean fell apart. Minnesota only scored 19 points, guys, in the first quarter. They scored 44 in quarter number two. They outscored the Kings 44-23 in the second quarter, and quite frankly, the Kings were lucky to get 23 points. Offensively, even when they were enjoying some success early on, and by success I mean building up a 13-point lead, I didn't like the offensive game plan from the get-go. And I don't believe that the Minnesota Timberwolves are a bad matchup for the Kings, because the Kings have had success against them twice when they had more talent, when they had Jimmy Butler, when they had Jeff Teague, when they were relatively healthy. With the exception of Karl Anthony Towns, this team was missing a lot of very important pieces. Teague was out. Cunningham was out. There were so many reasons why the Kings should have won this game and were expected to win this game, other than Las Vegas. Las Vegas had them as 3.5-point underdogs in this game, which was kind of surprising, but Vegas seems to know all, and they expected a trap game here with the return of Karl Anthony Towns from a very scary car accident. And they were right. Lo and behold, they were right. Kings looked good early, but offensively they were just forcing the issue, trying to shove the ball down the Minnesota Timberwolves' throats, trying to get to the rim. They're getting blocked left and right by Karl Anthony Towns, Taj Gibson. We know how physical he is inside. The Minnesota Timberwolves did a fantastic job defensively protecting the paint, and the Kings could not get into really any kind of offensive flow. They were trying to play inside out, but they didn't establish the inside, so therefore they didn't establish the outside either. Karl Anthony Towns was an absolute god in this game. 34 points, 21 rebounds, a couple of blocks. He was everywhere on both ends of the floor. He did finish with 5 fouls. The Kings did everything they could to get him into foul trouble, and he had 5 fouls for the final 6 or 7 minutes of the game, so much so that the Minnesota Timberwolves actually had to sub him out down the stretch so they could keep him in or keep him around for the final few minutes of the game, and the Kings just could not get him fouled out, could not take advantage of the time that he was off the floor. And to me, that was maybe the most disappointing part of this game, was the fact that when Karl Anthony Towns was off the floor, like I said, no Jeff Teague, no Cunningham. Yes, they have Derrick Rose, and I get he's trying to revive his career a little bit, and he's been a fun story to follow from a basketball standpoint. But this team was not good with Karl Anthony Towns off the floor. There are not nearly enough pieces on that Minnesota Timberwolves team with Karl Anthony Towns on the bench for the Kings not to be effective against them, even if their bench is in. I was extremely disappointed with how the Kings played against the second unit of the Timberwolves. Did not take advantage at all when Karl Anthony Towns was out of the game. In fact, when Karl Anthony Towns was out of the game, the Kings almost, or things almost got worse for Sacramento. And a lot of that has to do with a lot of bad individual performances. We'll start with the absolute worst one. I have defended Willie Cauley-Stein throughout this season. I believe Willie Cauley-Stein is a much more effective player than he's shown. I believe fans are much too harsh on Willie Cauley-Stein and expect too much of him as a player, or are looking at him to be something that he is not. That being said, Willie Cauley-Stein was dreadful, god-awful, horrific, inexcusable. Any word you want to use to describe Willie Cauley-Stein's, or any negative word you want to use to describe Willie Cauley-Stein's game last night applies. 4 points, one rebound. He was minus 20 in 13 minutes. Now, normally I don't pay too much attention to plus minus because it's a team stat overall, but in only 13 minutes to have five fouls and be minus 20, that takes an extra sort of bad effort. And Willie Cauley-Stein was absolutely horrific. Karl Anthony Towns has abused Willie throughout his career. The two former teammates, we know Karl Anthony Towns is always going to get the edge over Willie Cauley-Stein, but it shouldn't be this glaring. Willie Cauley-Stein is long enough, he's tall enough, and he's athletic enough to at least affect Karl Anthony Towns and make his life a little bit more difficult than it was in this game. In fact, there was no level of difficulty for Karl Anthony Towns in this one. 34 points, 21 rebounds, 2 blocks. He was all over the place. Willie Cauley-Stein was absolutely dreadful. And if you were to ask me right now, and now I know this is a gut reaction, but I've been feeling this way slowly but surely over the last few weeks. If you were to ask me if the Kings are interested or the probability of the Kings bringing Willie Cauley-Stein back, regardless of what the contract is, I would say as of right now, the Kings are leaning towards not bringing Willie Cauley-Stein back. The inconsistencies are there, and the fact that Harry Giles, who did get into foul trouble himself, but Harry Giles played just as good, if not better, defense than Karl Anthony Towns than Willie Cauley-Stein did. And then on top of that, Marvin Bagley played better defense than both of them against Karl Anthony Towns, especially down the stretch. That tells you all you need to know. The Kings, they have their front court of the future. It seems like as every second ticks by, Willie Cauley-Stein is less a part of that future. But it wasn't all on him. De'Aaron Fox had a good start offensively, but he went 8 of 24 for the game. Buddy Hield had 5 turnovers. He was sloppy. He was a little overzealous, trying to get and trying to do too much, was thinking 2 or 3 steps ahead without making sure he'd secured possession and secured the basketball. His turnovers and certainly hurt the Kings. The Kings, offensively overall, their turnovers were dreadful from the second quarter on. The Kings ended up shooting just 38%. They got into 0 offensive flow even early on. Like I said, even though they did take a 13-point lead, offensively, they didn't look good. They were forcing things, and they were really relying on the fact that the Minnesota Timberwolves early on were not making anything from three-point range. They were getting a lot of wide-open looks, but nothing was dropping. That's why the Kings were able to build up a lead. But quite frankly, the way offensively the Kings were playing, if Karl Anthony Towns and the Minnesota Timberwolves had shot a little bit better than they did, and for the entire game, Minnesota shot 50% from the field, but realistically, with the looks that they were getting, they should have shot 60 to 65%, and this game should have been over in the first quarter. But a monumental second quarter, and the Timberwolves never looked back. The one positive in this game, Marvin Bagley. 25 points, 11 rebounds, third straight double-double for him. He's been playing phenomenally, and he did get the start, which was good to see. However, it didn't work offensively, and we saw a clear drop off with the second unit. There was little to no scoring with the exception of Bogdan Bogdanovic with that second unit. That's where Marvin Bagley's been so effective, so I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if he is back to coming off of the bench for the Kings on Wednesday when they host Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks. That's no knock against him. That's where he's been most effective. Well, he's been effective both as a starter, like he was last night, and as a bench player, but it has been working with him coming off the bench. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm not saying that that is how Marvin Bagley's career should be handled permanently. I believe by the end of this season and by the start of next season, absolutely for sure, Marvin Bagley should be a starter in the NBA and should be worth that starting unit. And I don't care if it's Willie Cauley-Stein next to him. I don't care if it's Nemanja Bjelica. You cannot hold Marvin Bagley back based off of the player that he's playing alongside in that starting front court. So he will be a starter one day. And that leads us to the arguably the most disappointing part of the entire night, which is how everything else played out in terms of a standings update. Now, there's good news and a bad news side to all of this. The good news is the Spurs lost to the Brooklyn Nets 101-85, so the Kings didn't lose any ground. They're just as close to an 8th seed today as they were yesterday. The bad news is the Spurs lost to the Brooklyn Nets 101-85, which means had the Kings won this game, they would be right now in sole possession of the 8th seed. The Los Angeles Clippers did beat the Dallas Mavericks last night, 121-112. So they're now in the seventh seed, sole possession of that. The Los Angeles Lakers also lost to the Memphis Grizzlies, 110-105. Had the Kings won, they would have created even more separation between them and LeBron James's Los Angeles Lakers that I'm still not counting out, even though I've lost tremendous amounts of respect for LeBron. He's playing absolutely zero defense this season. He's been a coach killer. He's been a cancer to that locker room, really. And I think every Laker fan should be absolutely disappointed with what I believe he has done to this roster and to the excitement and the possibility of a lot of greatness from the Los Angeles Lakers. I think LeBron James has sucked the air out of that organization right now, and he's going to spin it in his own way. Been very disappointed about that. But the Kings had a good opportunity last night to create even more separation from LeBron James and the Lakers, and they weren't able to do it. Remember yesterday's date, ladies and gentlemen. Remember Monday, February 25th. If the Kings miss out on the playoffs, this day is the first day I'm pointing to as real opportunity in Minnesota to create separation both from those behind you and to gain ground and even separate yourself a little bit from those ahead of you, and you were not able to do it. There are very few people in Sacramento surrounding and talking about this Kings organization that have defended Dave Yeager and pledged their support to Dave Yeager more than myself. I love head coach Dave Yeager. I love what he's been able to do with this team. I think he absolutely deserves tremendous amounts of credit, if not the bulk of the credit, for how this team has been performing and the success that they've had this season, the incredible leap that players have made both as a team and individually from this summer to where they are at today. I love Dave Yeager, and I fully support Dave Yeager, and I fully trust Dave Yeager. That being said, I am not naive to his weaknesses, and I am not so in love and so blinded by my support of Dave Yeager that I'm unwilling to offer what I believe is fair criticism. Dave Yeager's rotations and his starting lineups have always been something puzzling to me, as well as the majority of people that aren't on his coaching staff, maybe even his own coaching staff, who knows. Dave Yeager has always played the cards very close to his chest when it comes to his rotations and his playing time with players. He does not answer questions about it at all in any scenario. He never has, not just in his time as a Sacramento King head coach, but in his entire tenure as a head coach in the NBA. He never has ever answered questions and voluntarily given out bulk information in terms of his rotations and why he plays certain players in one spot versus another. Last night was maybe the worst rotational coaching that I've seen out of head coach Dave Yeager in his entire time as the leader for this Kings squad. It's absolutely inexcusable to me to not have Buddy Hield on the floor down the stretch. It's also absolutely inexcusable to me to not bring De'Aaron Fox back in until 6 to 5 minutes left in the game after your bench made somewhat of a run to get you within 8 points. Minnesota took a timeout. Kings went on a run, cut a double-digit lead down to 8 points. There are just under 7 minutes remaining. Coming out of the timeout, De'Aaron Fox is not on the floor. Timberwolves go on another mini run themselves, go back up by 13, I believe. Yeager calls a timeout and then subs De'Aaron Fox in. Too little, too late. But it really wasn't, because De'Aaron Fox, Corey Brewer, and the rest of that unit that got the Kings back in cut it all the way down to a 6-point game. And then it was a 4-point game with a couple minutes remaining. Karl-Anthony Towns checks back into the game because the Wolves are aware that things are slipping away and they need some buckets and they need their star to put this game away. And the Kings' star offensive player is where? He's sitting on the bench. Now, this is something I didn't see talked about on Twitter last night, but something I paid attention to. I paid a lot of attention to it. After Karl-Anthony Towns comes back into the game and the Kings, their 4-point lead or their 4-point deficit becomes a 6 and 8-point deficit, I'm staring right at the Kings bench, and Buddy Hield is sitting on the edge of his seat with his warm-ups already halfway off, looking at head coach Dave Yeager like, when am I going back in? Coach, I'm ready to go. Put me back in. Fully expecting to be subbed back into the game. Dave Yeager elects to keep Corey Brewer in the game over Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield did not play for the remainder of the contest. Kings lose. Now, I'm not here to bash Corey Brewer because I think he gave the Kings a whole hell of a lot of energy and effort. He's one of the reasons why they were able to make it somewhat of a game down the stretch. But guys like Corey Brewer, your bench unit, their job is to come into the game, and if your starters are in a hole, try and get back into it and bring the game back to even so your starters can try again or try and take a lead. Or if the starters create a lead, your job as a bench is to sustain that while your starters rest. The Kings bench got the Kings back into the game. Now, it wasn't completely a bench unit. There were some starters mixed in there. And while they weren't fantastic by any means, they did manage to get within 4 points late after a Marvin Bagley three-pointer. And Buddy Hield stayed on the bench. There is no scenario that makes sense as to why Buddy Hield was not on the floor there. And I get he did not have his best game in terms of taking care of the basketball, and defensively he wasn't great either, although his man didn't really kill him. Nobody outside of Karl-Anthony Towns killed the Kings last night. But Buddy Hield was still 7 of 16 from the field, including 3 of 6, 50% from three-point range. You were down by 4 points. A three-pointer would have made it a one-point game and really put pressure on a shorthanded Minnesota squad. And you left your best shooter, your best scorer, and your go-to offensive player who has been huge and clutch for you consistently throughout this entire season. You left him on the bench. Now, most theories that I'm seeing, and one that I understand, is that maybe this was a teaching moment for Dave Yeager and Buddy Hield. Wrong place, wrong time. In a nutshell, you are in a playoff race. You are taking on a team that is not out of it, that is only a couple games behind you. You have games that are going on currently, games that have gone final of teams you're trying to catch up to that have lost. And your best offensive player is on the bench, not in the game, when you need baskets and you need to find a way to steal one in Minnesota. It makes zero sense to me. Again, I 100% support head coach Dave Yeager. I love head coach Dave Yeager. I give him a standing ovation every time I can. I believe that he is directly responsible for why the Kings are enjoying the success that they are this season. But last night, leaving Buddy Hield on the bench down the stretch when you needed big buckets, you needed clutch moments, you needed a hero to stand up, inexcusable to me. Absolutely inexcusable. Now, had Buddy Hield come into the game, there's no guarantee that the Kings would have closed that four-point gap and won. And maybe he comes into the game and turns the ball over another two times and the Kings lose by 10. I'd rather have Buddy Hield in that spot than Corey Brewer every day of the week. Very disappointing by head coach Dave Yeager. But here's one thing that I will say, because I know some of you might be listening to this and thinking, oh, this has directly to do with what happened in Golden State with the Warriors. Dave Yeager was tired of Buddy Hield and his ego to take that last shot. He was teaching him a lesson. No, that's not the case whatsoever. That is absolutely not the case. I don't know the mind of head coach Dave Yeager, but I can promise you and 100% guarantee you that it had absolutely nothing to do with their altercation that took place after or during the Golden State Warrior game. That was blown over and brushed away within hours after that game, and that was very apparent with Buddy Hield's 34-point performance in the win against the Oklahoma City Thunder. That scenario had absolutely nothing to do with this scenario. That being said, 100% inexcusable for Buddy Hield not to be playing. Very poor coaching by head coach Dave Yeager. I'm very disappointed. From one challenge to the next, Kings drop a really big opportunity to end a road trip with a win in Minnesota and come back with some good momentum as you return home for a decent homestand. And it begins with hosting Giannis Antetokounmpo, and the Milwaukee Bucks, who, of course, are one of the top teams, if not actually they are the number one team in the Eastern Conference right now, 46-14 overall record. They are 21-9 outside of their home floor, which, by the way, at home, they're 25-5. Giannis and the Bucks have abused the Kings this season, have abused the Kings in the past. Last time the Bucks were here in Sacramento last season, they blew the Kings absolutely out of the water. Things don't get easier. But here's the good news. In terms of strength of schedule, which is an actual metric that is followed and created statistically, strength of schedule-wise, the Kings have the fifth easiest schedule in the league for the remainder of this season. That's the good news. The great news is that the majority of the teams ahead of them have much more difficult schedules. And we know how difficult the Kings' schedule was to start the season. So that's the great news. The bad news is you can't be losing games like you lost last night to the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Clippers have now created two games of separation with you, and they've had your number throughout this entire season. And after you most likely lose to the Milwaukee Bucks on Wednesday, you have to face them on Friday. Things are not just because the strength of schedule favors the Kings. The Kings have no walk to the park or walk in the park to make the playoffs. It's unfortunate what happened in Minnesota. And again, the good news is because the Spurs lost, they didn't really lose any ground. They're still just one game out of the eighth seed in the West. But you cannot use your easy schedule as an excuse to take these games lightly. And I'm not telling Kings players, regardless of if they're listening to this podcast or not, which they probably aren't, but I'm not telling them anything they don't already know. I'm not telling head coach Dave Yeager and this coaching staff anything they don't already know. They're aware that it's not going to be a walk in the park for them. But this homestand, you got four games. You need to win two of them, and three of them are against difficult opponents. You have the Bucks, you have the Clippers, you have the Knicks, and you have the Boston Celtics. Then you go back on the road for another Eastern Conference road trip, and you should win at least two, but I'm looking at three of these games. The Knicks, the Wizards, the Celtics, and the 76ers. Then you return home for the Bulls, the Nets, the Mavericks, and the Suns. Then back on the road, Lakers, Mavericks, Pelicans, Rockets, Spurs. Then you come home, Rockets, and Cavaliers. Then you go on the road for Jazz, come back home for Pelicans, end your season on the road in Portland. Fifth easiest schedule, but still a lot of very difficult matchups there. Kings have had a lot of success against the Eastern Conference so far this season, but here's the discouraging part. If you're looking at the NBA standings overall, and you're looking at where the Kings are at in compared to their opponents, yes, they're ahead of the Lakers. Yes, they're ahead of the Minnesota Timberwolves. But they're on the outside looking in, and this season they're 17-23 against the Western Conference. They're going to need to win games against the Western Conference if they want to make it in. Luckily, they still have meetings with the Suns, Pelicans, Mavericks, like I mentioned. It's not impossible, but a win last night against the Minnesota Timberwolves certainly would have helped. All right, I'm wrapping it up. I'm mentioning it briefly because this story absolutely disgusts me. It disappoints me. I'm praying to God it's not true because Mike Bibby is one of my childhood heroes, one of my favorite players growing up. I'm praying that this is not true. But Mike Bibby has been accused of sexual assault by a high school teacher at Shadow Mountain High School, where he coaches in Arizona. He has been a coach at Shadow Mountain for 6 years. He's led that team or that high school to 5 state titles. But according to a teacher there, he groped her, grabbed her by the waist, pulled her into a car. And there's more to that report that I'm not going to say because it doesn't need to be said. Mike Bibby, as of right now, is under investigation for sexual assault. Bibby's attorney, Donald Harris, denies the allegations, saying, quote, "I can say with pretty much certainty this alleged incident didn't happen, and that will be shown down the road. Mike Bibby did not participate in sexual assault in any way, shape, or form that was alleged by this lady 2 years ago. This incident allegedly took place in February of 2017. Formulate your own opinions. Think what you want. I pray to God this isn't true, but if it is true, I admire the woman for stepping forward. It's not a great spot or an easy spot to be in by any means, especially when you're dealing with a former NBA player and someone who has the support and the fans that Mike Bibby has. Ugly story. Disgusting, and I hope this is the last time I have to mention it on this podcast, other than hopefully I get to say weeks from now or days from now that the investigation has concluded and there is nothing true about these allegations. I hope that's the case. Awful story. Sorry to end on a sour note. It's been kind of a sour podcast overall, which is very different from normal. So if you're new here to the Locked On Kings podcast, normally this is a happy place, a place of celebration, especially throughout this season. Normally I'm a happy-go-lucky guy. I'm still getting over a sickness. And I promise more optimism in times to come. But with last night's loss, this Mike Bibby story, a lot to be disappointed and frustrated about in this current state today. But hey, a surprise win, a shocking win over the Milwaukee Bucks at home could change everything. And we're not 100% sure if Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to be playing in that game. He did not play in the Bucks' most recent game. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. If you want to respond to anything that we discussed in today's podcast, please do so. You can find me on Twitter at MattGeorgeKHTK. You can also email me at any time, mgeorge@saclocalmedia.com. It's a great way to get in touch with me. Reach out to me on either of those platforms if you're interested in being involved in our Fans Only podcast, which I'm going to be doing here in early March. If you don't know what the Fans Only podcast is, I invite you, the fans, the listeners, onto the podcast, and I interview you, get your stories on how you became a Kings fan, your takes on the Kings this season. We'll discuss playoffs and all that. If you are interested in doing that and being on this podcast, let me know right now. I still have a couple spots open for this upcoming show. So be sure to reach out to me right now. Would love to have you on. Until tomorrow's podcast, my name is Matt George. Thank you so much for listening to today's Locked On Kings podcast. Hopefully more positivity and optimism tomorrow on the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.